been using both censorship and propaganda to cover up the existence of UFOs. Terry Hansen has been gathering supporting documents. He's also sent us some. Look under feature article if you have access to a computer. The front page of a New York Times article from 1954, in which President Eisenhower then denied that flying saucers came from outer space. Tonight on Coast to Coast AM, a special discussion with our guest Terry Hansen on UFOs, the media, and the government. Terry Hansen is a former computer magazine editor and now an independent journalist with a special interest in scientific controversies and the politics of mass media. Now, he has followed the UFO controversy for much of his life and has occasionally written about it for various media, including National Public Radio. Hansen holds a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's degree in science journalism, both from the University of Minnesota. He was a founding partner of KFH Publications, a Seattle computer magazine publishing company, and he is a licensed private pilot with ratings for single-engine aircraft and gliders and skipper of the diesel-powered wooden fishing trawler called the New Rosa. He is our guest now on Coast to Coast. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Hi, George. Good evening.
You know, I had an opportunity this weekend to see on video the aviator and the life of Howard Hughes. And I got to tell you, just watching him as an aviator himself, it's got to be exciting to go up there and to do some of the things that he did. And when you got your private pilot license, did you ever imagine that it would be that exciting for you?
Well, I think I was pretty excited about it at the time. I think I was still in college when I started getting my single-engine land rating, and then I eventually got a rating for gliders and flew gliders over the area south of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So it's been fun over the years.
Well, you know, being a pilot, I think, also gives you a little special advantage to talk about what we're going to talk about tonight. I just think that pilots are, you know, a little more aware of some of the things in their surroundings. Oh, by the way, I should mention, too, that Terry, between September 2nd and 5th, will be a keynote speaker and a major speaker about UFO censorship and propaganda at the National UFO Conference in Hollywood, California. I was there last year, and of course I'm in St. Louis during this time period, so I'm going to miss you, Terry. But it's a very good event, and I'm sure a lot of people will look forward to coming out to see you speak about what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight as well.
Well, I appreciate you bringing that up, and I might also say that if anyone's interested in more information about that event, there is a website. It's www.nufoc.com, and all the details can be found there.
Excellent. Well, you know, I think it is admirable that several of these groups and organizations around the country continue to pound away at the subject of ufology. And, you know, with their speaker bureaus, with their conventions and their conferences, because mainstream media, which has been a major gripe for you for all these years, really doesn't like to touch the UFO story. I'm not talking about the History Channel and venues like that are beginning to become aware, I think, of covering these topics. But mainstream media still doesn't really touch the story, do they?
No, and especially the news media, George. It really is very, very rare for the subject to be treated as a serious news item. And it's almost gotten to the point where the subject is a taboo. You can go to one of the major news organizations or news companies or journalists and give them all the facts on a silver platter about a major event with very highly credible eyewitnesses and other corroborating evidence, and they just simply aren't interested about 98% of the time.
Well, let's hope that changes. Now, tell us a little bit, Terry, about your background beyond just what I read to everybody.
Okay, George. Well, I'm old enough to remember some of the early years of this controversy because I was born in 1951, and so to some extent, I grew up reading about UFOs in the newspapers and magazines of the 50s and 60s. At that time, UFOs were a major news story and were taken fairly seriously. And in fact, there was a study done by a journalism professor named Herbert Strantz, published about 1970, in which he surveyed newspaper coverage of the UFO topic from 1947 to 1966. And he found, rather astonishingly, that there had been hundreds of thousands, possibly a million or more news items about UFOs published in the United States up through 1966. So if you contrast that with the situation today, where very, very rarely do you see a serious article about UFOs, it was quite a dramatic shift in the way the news organizations have treated the topic.
These organizations, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say that I kind of got seriously interested in the UFO data or the UFO evidence because I was a biology student in the late 70s, early 70s, I should say. And I was very interested in the search for extraterrestrial life and the origin of life and so on. And I was struck by the reluctance of the scientific community to address the UFO topic. And so I kind of became more and more interested in the sociology of the controversy, and that later led to looking at the way the topic is handled in the news. So that's kind of a quick summary of how I came about to study this topic.
Have you ever been able to, or have you sighted what you would call a UFO in your career?
No, I can't say that I have. I've seen a few things. I'm, among other things, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I have seen some things that were they were difficult for me to identify, but I'm not sure that I would go so far as to say they were a UFO in the classic sense of the word, as you know, referring to, say, an extraterrestrial craft or something of that nature.
Let's talk a little bit about the media, Terry, but I really want to dive into the UFOs, national security, and government, of course. But with the media, do you think the fact that this falls on silence within the media, it's done intentionally because maybe they've been told to by someone, some group, or they simply think it's a sensational-type story, and I don't mean in the type where they want to put it on for ratings or anything like that, but they just feel as if it doesn't have the kind of meat and potatoes that they want to put on their broadcasts.
Well, I think a variety of things are really going on. This was the real question that I tried to answer in my book, and I approached it by trying to understand the history of the relationship between the big media companies and the U.S. government. And I think there's a pivotal aspect of this whole issue, and that is that the UFO topic from the very early days was seen as a national security problem by the intelligence community and the military. And the reason for that is that the UFOs in the 40s and 50s were tending to display a great deal of interest in our military installations and especially nuclear weapons installations. And this is very clear from CIA, or I should say government memos. There was a memo from H. Marshall Chadwell, who was Assistant Director of Scientific Intelligence to the CIA Director in I think it was 1952. And he said that the UFOs were tending to conduct surveillance. And if you read also Edward Ruppelt's book, Edward Ruppelt was the director or head of Project Blue Book early in the controversy. He also commented on the fact that the UFOs were tending to be sighted around military bases, Strategic Air Command installations, things of that nature. So, you know, if you're in the military, I mean, you have to take that seriously. If anyone or anything is displaying interest in your military installations, that's a big issue.
It seems to me that these reports of UFO sightings around military bases, of course, we know what happened in 52 over the White House, but it seems to me that they really seriously, though maybe clandestinely, they seriously took a look at UFOs. They didn't understand what they were. They thought possibly that there was some strategic initiatives underway, maybe by other governments, but they weren't quite sure. But they did seem to handle it, cover it, investigate it. Now, unless it's all been swept under the table or it's hidden, there doesn't seem to be many government investigations into UFOs. Why do I have that perception?
Well, I think that perception came about simply by kind of a sleight of hand on the part of the government. In other words, they tried to give the public the impression that they were studying the subject but not coming up with anything of value. But there are many indications to indicate that there was a parallel investigation but a clandestine investigation. I mentioned a little earlier this memo from Marshall Chadwell, who was in scientific intelligence. In 1953, the CIA had organized something called the Robertson Panel, and the Robertson Panel took a look at some of the cases that had gotten a lot of media attention, and then immediately made a recommendation that the subject be debunked. And so, now, who was Robertson? That's an important question. Robertson was a very high-ranking scientific intelligence guy. He was a top physicist, you know, an associate of Einstein and Oppenheimer and people of that caliber. So if it was just a public relations problem that they were trying to deal with, why would they bring in these very top-level scientific intelligence people? I think it's a strong indication, one of many indications, that there was really something much more important going on.
The work of government and the people that they assigned to the projects, the Edward Ruppelts, the Dr. J. Allen Hynek's, these people, isn't it interesting, Terry, that eventually all of them began to believe eventually in UFOs, in the existence of UFOs? Something dramatically must have changed these people's minds.
Yeah, I think so. My feeling about that is that I think a lot of them started out playing the government's game. In other words, they were going along with the official position that nothing significant was happening. But after a while, it began to seem more and more absurd to take that position, because the evidence, when you really took a close look at it, was really quite overwhelming. And to continue to argue in the face of that quality of evidence that there was nothing significant going on was just untenable for many people.
In the 1970s, the then Prime Minister of the little tiny Grenada, he wanted an investigation into UFOs. He wanted it admitted into the United Nations for an investigation into UFOs, but because apparently that little area was getting buzzed all the time during several years in the 70s. But that fell on deaf ears. Nobody wanted to do that. And I mean, and here was a politico screaming, hey, we have to do something about this. They decided through the United Nations, they didn't want to do anything.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that at least here in the United States, the attitude in the military intelligence community was it was a real can of worms, and they didn't really want to open it up and reveal the full extent of what was going on, because we know now from Air Force personnel who've come forth to talk about it that the UFOs in the 1960s and again in the 1970s were buzzing, if you want to put it that way, and in some cases disabling some of our ICBMs in the Minuteman project around Great Falls, Montana, and other places. And that's actually one of the major cases I look at in my book to sort of open up the discussion as to whether these events are being suppressed in some fashion.
Tell me a little bit about this episode.
Okay, well, I'll talk about the 1975 events first. At the time, I was living in Minneapolis, and I got a telephone call one day from a good friend of mine who was a radio disc jockey in Great Falls, Montana, and he related that he had been listening to the VHF scanning radio and had heard that the sheriff's department was reporting unidentified flying objects over the ICBM complexes. Now, this sort of intrigued me because it was a pretty sensational development, obviously.
Oh, absolutely,
But yet I was not able to learn very much about it. I don't think I was able to learn anything about it from my regional and the national news sources. It was pretty much quiet. But if you actually go to Montana and go through the newspaper morgues there, you find that there was quite a substantial amount of regional press coverage about these events, and it was very explicit in these accounts that the UFOs were being sighted over the ICBMs, and you know, the sources for the news stories were often Air Force personnel, security guards, people of that nature, and in one case, an Air Force spokesman actually admitted that this was taking place, but they sort of tried to blow it off and say, you know, it wasn't really very important or they weren't interested, which is a bit of a mismatch if you want to think of it that way, because they, you know, the seriousness of the event certainly merited much more serious attention and a serious attitude. Now, this story, as I say, it received a lot of press coverage in Montana. It was well known. It was the subject of I think, one or two books that were written in the area prominent people. So it was, you know, it received a lot of news, and it took place over a period of many months from about October through December 1975. Now, you know, the average person would think sort of intuitively that a study, you know, a series of events of this magnitude that received such a large amount of press coverage and happened over such an extended period of time would generate at least a few national level news stories. But if you try to find any, there just aren't any there. It just wasn't reported by any of the wire services or the stringers or network affiliates and people like that. It just seemed to have been completely hushed up.
And it would seem to me to be a major story. I mean, when you're getting objects, regardless of what they might have been, if you're getting objects buzzing ICBM sites, that is a huge story.
Well, it certainly is. And we know, as I said earlier, that this was not the first event of its kind. There were similar events taking place in 1967. And there's an Air Force missile officer named Robert Salas who's since come forth to talk about what he knows, along with a few other Air Force mm-hmm. personnel. And he says that the UFOs, while hovering outside their launch command facilities, were somehow able to shut down multiple Minuteman ICBMs. And Boeing Company, which was the prime contractor, was never able to determine how this could be done. It was a complete mystery. So there you have it. I mean, that's a pretty big story, but yet about 2 years went by before the story received any national coverage, and the first newspaper to pay attention was the National Enquirer. Well, it's a little bit interesting that the National Enquirer, out of all the other newspapers in the country, would pay attention to this, because many people in the intelligentsia and the academic world would kind of scoff at anything that would appear in the National Enquirer, and in fact, it would kind of suggest that the whole thing was probably never happened.
True. Yeah.
Now, the National Enquirer was about the only national newspaper throughout this period that paid serious attention to the UFO topic, and the stories, although you know they may have had sensational sounding headlines, the stories were most of the time, if not always, very accurate. They had their facts correct, but the fact that the stories were mixed into this somewhat disreputable newspaper that focused a lot on sensational celebrity stories and items of that nature mm-hmm. tended to debunk the whole UFO topic. And even today, a lot of newspaper reporters and editors shy away from the subject because they feel that they don't want to look like the National Enquirer. That's a common remark that you hear. What a lot of people don't know about the National Enquirer was that it was started by a gentleman named Gene Pope, who had come right out of the CIA's psychological warfare department with a great deal of money and was able to buy a newspaper and then turn it into the National Enquirer. So it raises a question about what Pope's real agenda was in covering the UFO topic. I actually talked to Bob Pratt, who wrote a lot of the UFO stories for the National Enquirer. He's a very good reporter, by the way. And he said that, curiously, the UFO stories didn't really help the Enquirer's sales. When they would run a UFO story on the front page or prominently, sales of the newspaper would actually drop off. And this was a well-known fact within the National Enquirer. And yet the publisher, Gene Pope, somehow insisted on covering the UFO topic. So it raises a question about what his real agenda was in doing that, especially given his ties to the CIA.
What was the motivation indeed? Stay with us. Terry Hansen, our guest. More to come. I wonder if anybody took pictures of these UFOs near some of these ICBM sites. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Terry Hansen. Terry, do you think anybody took any pictures of those UFOs over those missile silos at all back in the 70s?
Precisely what the circumstances were, but there was a publisher of a newspaper in Shelby, Montana, Lloyd Steinbaugh, who was contacted by the local police department and asked to photograph a UFO, and he did take a number of photographs, and they were published, some of them at least, were published in the Shelby Times. But the quality of the photos were is somewhat disappointing because they were taken at night. And as you probably know, if you've done any nighttime photography, you know, the background doesn't show up very well. You get bright lights and things like that, but nothing very, very prominent in the foreground or background. So I don't think the quality of the photos that exist are particularly good. There were a lot of radar trackings of these objects, however. That's quite clear from a variety of different sources, and was described, I think, in a book called Mystery Stalks the Prairie by a regional deputy sheriff. Now, I don't know for sure about the 1967 sightings because that's not the focus of my book, and I don't know for sure whether anyone got photographs of those incidents.
But somewhere along the line, somebody has had to have said something because, of course, it's very unusual that you would get sightings like that over these silos. And I guess why I'm continuing to dwell on that, Terry, is you know, national security at stake. What do you think the government or government leaders were doing when they saw this happening? Do you think the first thing they thought that it might have been Soviet at the time?
Well, I don't think they – I think they pretty much ruled that out by the 1960s. My personal reading of the situation is that they knew by the early 50s that these were coming in from outer space. Some of the early intelligence estimates indicated that that was the case. And the performance and characteristics of the sighting reports at that time were enough to rule out any conventional aircraft of any type. These objects were traveling thousands of miles per hour in the atmosphere or even on the edge of space. And it was pretty clear that the Soviets didn't have anything quite like that.
So this concern for security was then what, transferred into massive cover-up, massive censorship? Why did they take that direction and decide not to be a little more forthright with all this?
Well, initially there was quite a lot of concern that there was some kind of an invasion going on. And if you
go get yourself. You want some water or something?
Yeah, let me just get a drink here.
Go ahead. Go get that and take care of that for a while. Clear your throat because you're going to be on with us for many hours.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. Hey, it happens. It's my biggest nightmare, by the way, for myself, you know.
There was a news clip that I put on my website. It was taken from the New York Times in 1954. And in this clip, which you read earlier, President Eisenhower actually made a public statement denying that the Earth was being invaded by flying saucers from outer space. Now, that seems incredible in today's atmosphere, but at the time, that was a genuine concern because, remember, in the early 50s, there was relatively little press censorship at that time, and a lot of the reports that they were getting were coming from commercial airline pilots and test pilots, military pilots, people of that caliber, and the reports were very, very clear and unambiguous. These were not sightings of glowing blobs of light or anything like that. These were physical objects seen in daylight, sometimes formations of objects flying together. I have a number of those clips on my website also for anyone who wants to look at those. So, you know, there was not much ambiguity about the reality of this phenomenon in the early 50s. Now, over time, the government took a number of measures to try to eliminate those types of stories from the newspaper. They made UFOs a security issue and required that civilian commercial airline pilots had to report these to the military. And once they did that, they became classified information under the national security laws and therefore could not be disclosed to the news media. And so that was one of the things they did. Another thing was that they pressured the airline companies to come down on their pilots and tell them in no uncertain terms that they were not to talk to the media about these types of sightings.
See, I didn't know that, Terry, and that could very well then be a reason why we would think we would get a lot of pilot reports, but they were always silent about this stuff.
Exactly, and the pilot reports began to slowly disappear, and by the late 1950s, there were very few pilot reports being made. Now, there was a protest, by the way. 450 pilots signed a petition on the East Coast, commercial airline pilots protesting the fact that the Air Force was censoring their sightings. And this was written up in a newspaper called the, it was Newark, New Jersey. It'll come to me here in a minute.
And when was that, roughly?
The article, I believe, was, let me see here, I think it was 1958.
Okay, so quite a ways ago.
Yeah, that news clip is on my website in its entirety. So basically, you know, it came down to whether you wanted to keep your job or not. If you had a UFO sighting, you just learned after a while that it wasn't going to advance your career to talk to somebody in the media. I once had a Braniff airline, a former Braniff airline pilot, come up to me and tell me about his sighting. He had a sighting sometime in the early 60s, and both he and his co-pilot saw this craft. It flew alongside their DC-3 for some time. And I asked him, you know, what would happen if you had gone to the press with this story? And he said, well, I would have been given a psychiatric evaluation, and that would have been the end of my flying career. So we knew, you know, that this was something that we could not talk about openly.
Did anybody in any report that you may have been privy to or find ever stress the concern that these were hostile vehicles or craft?
I think that was certainly a concern on the part of the military. I mean, if you know, put yourself in the position of a scientific intelligence officer trying to determine what the modus operandi of these vehicles is. You know that they're surveilling our military facilities and port facilities and things like that. But what's their real intention? Are they hostile? Are they just, you know, checking us out? What's really going on? I think early on they probably didn't know the answer to that, and that was probably why they began to torque down on some of this news coverage via censorship and the Robertson panel and various other things that were done to try to eliminate press coverage.
Do you believe, Terry, that there were deals cut with these extraterrestrials, as some people have reported, where governments trade information for whatever these people, these extraterrestrials want?
Well, I've heard that rumor and that story. I have no way of knowing whether it's really true. But, you know, if you go back and read the actual newspaper accounts of these encounters between commercial airliners and UFOs, it seemed to me that what these UFOs were doing was demonstrating their presence in no uncertain terms. In other words, they would fly alongside or fly in front of an airliner as if to say, here we are, this is what we can do. And it seemed to me that this was a prelude to contact, that they were sort of, you know, saying, here we are, and where it went from there, I don't know. But there, you know, a number of people have claimed that contact of some sort did take place between the aliens, if you want to call them that, and the United States government, and it was simply never disclosed publicly because the government decided that the public wasn't ready for it.
And what about Brookings, the report from Brookings that simply said that people would panic, that they couldn't handle it, therefore we're going to have to suppress them and hide this information from them?
Yeah, that's right. Well, the U.S. government, you know, before they do anything, they usually study it. And they did do a study or commissioned a study by the Brookings Institution to see what the social impact of this would be. And the conclusion was that our civilization might actually crumble and fall apart if open disclosure of contact with an advanced intelligence took place. So if you're in a policy-making position, you really have to ask yourself, do you want to risk something like that taking place, I mean, the actual destruction of our civilization? And a lot of people might think that that's a little extreme, but if you look at human history, whenever a more advanced civilization contacted a less technologically advanced civilization, the less advanced civilization usually did crumble. So it was something that they had to take, you know, fairly seriously, I think.
What if also, though, Terry, they truly know that whatever the agenda is of these supposed extraterrestrials, that this agenda may very well be beyond hostile, I mean almost despicable, almost frightening, where maybe they're capturing people, maybe they use us for food, you know, looking at that old Twilight Zone episode, To Serve Man. What if it's that, and it's so horrible, and there's nothing they can do to stop it, that they figure, well, we're just not going to tell people about it. Is that possible?
Well, it's possible. I'm not persuaded that that is the case. I think that the military tends to see anything as a threat, whether it's a real threat or not. And I guess I would have to see some evidence that there was a genuine threat before I would come to the conclusion that that was the case. But it's certainly possible. You know, it's a possibility.
What about the role of the CIA, for example? Do they have any part of this?
Well, the CIA, you know, many people think that the CIA is just in the intelligence gathering business, but actually the CIA has many other functions besides, you know, just gathering information. And one of their functions is to create and disseminate propaganda. And one of the more sensational cases that I use in my book has to do with a broadcast by CBS Television in 1966. CBS TV used to have a series called CBS Reports. It was a documentary series, and it was usually narrated by Walter Cronkite. In 1966, there was a tremendous amount of UFO activity taking place, and the U.S. government was trying to explain it away. And CBS aired a program called UFOs, Friend, Foe, or Fantasy. And the gist of the program was that all UFOs were attributed to cases of mistaken identity and the planet Venus and so on and so forth. Essentially, it was the government's official line. And it followed very closely the recommendations of the CIA's Robertson panel of 1953, about 13 years earlier. Well, subsequently, a letter has turned up from Dr. Thornton Page, who was a member of the Robertson panel in 1953, and he was writing to the secretary of the Robertson panel on a train in on the East Coast, and he confided to this correspondent that he helped organize the CBS TV show around the Robertson panel's conclusion. Mm. So that's very strong evidence that there was some sort of collusion between the Central Intelligence Agency and CBS TV to try to spin public perceptions about UFOs in a negative way. Now, that may seem sensational or fantastic to people who aren't familiar with CIA, but it was widely reported in the mid-1970s that most of the big news organizations did have these kinds of relationships with the CIA where they would do favors of one kind or another in the interests of national security. So if, you know, as we now know, the UFOs were presenting a threat to our nuclear weapon system, there was certainly a rationale for CBS to cooperate with the government and try to help manage public perceptions.
What does your gut tell you about what was going on during this whole period?
Well, you know, I was just rereading Colonel Phil Corso's book,
Day After Roswell,
and it's very interesting in there that he contends that the UFO or flying saucer crisis was going on parallel to the Cold War period, and that the Cold War was used as kind of a cover for the UFO issue. In other words, the government was able to manage the UFO situation and explain where the funds were going and so forth by saying it was for the Cold War against the Soviet Union. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that from what I know of the history of the controversy. I think that there was a parallel crisis unfolding along with the Soviet Union conflict.
If you were running government, Terry, and you knew that this was real, would you disclose it? What would you do about it?
Well, I think that, the government has committed itself to what I think is really, in the long run, a self-destructive position, because they have decided, evidently, to keep this secret as long as it's possible to do so. And I think that if you look at the public opinion polls, there was a Time Life or a Time CNN poll of a few years back, which indicated that 80% of the American public believes the government is hiding knowledge of extraterrestrials. So in a sense, the censorship and propaganda did not work in the long run, in the sense that it did not succeed in convincing the public that there was nothing to UFOs. Most people do think there's something going on, and they have come to believe that the government is lying about it in some fashion for some reason, but they don't know why. So I think at some point it's going to be essential for the government to restore some of its credibility by acknowledging that, yes, indeed, something has been going on. Whether they will ever tell us, you know, everything they know about it, I don't know. But I think that it's become a little bit absurd to go on pretending that this stuff isn't happening, because there's so much documentation out there right now.
And then you get some governments, Terry, like Brazil, that want to be a little more forthright with their information.
Yes, that's right. And I think that's another reason that, you know, the U.S. government has put itself in a very difficult position, because people who do read the national or the international press and follow the international media know that, other governments do take a different position on this and have acknowledged that there is indeed a real phenomenon here.
Do you believe that this is real?
I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, somebody asked me that question the other day, and I said, well, you know, it's like asking me whether I believe New Zealand exists. I've never been to New Zealand, so I can't speak from first-hand experience, but I'm pretty darn sure that New Zealand does exist, you know. And I guess it's the same way with UFOs and flying saucers. I've never actually seen one, but I'm familiar with a great deal of evidence that bears on this subject. I've talked to many, many people, first-hand witnesses, people with excellent credibility and credentials. And so I really am forced to the conclusion that it is a real phenomenon. And also my scientific background in biology and astronomy leads me to the conclusion that the universe is undoubtedly well populated with advanced intelligences. It's very, very old, and there are many other planets and stars out there. So the likelihood from a scientific point of view is that, you know, there's interstellar commerce has been going on for probably many millions of years by now.
Why can't we, Terry, get the kind of proof we need to convince everybody beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is real?
Well, I think that you can convince about 80% of the public, according to the public opinion polls, and that's a pretty good job. It's hard to get Americans to agree. You know, it's hard to get 80% of Americans to agree about anything. So you're pretty much most of the way there. I would say the definitive evidence would have to be something like a physical artifact, you know, the Roswell crash disk or whatever. And the problem with that is that the U.S. government has become very, very secretive over the years. It has sequestered a great deal of information, and it is not very open about many things that it does, even about how we spend our tax dollars.
All right, we'll talk more about this when we come back with our special guest tonight, Terry Hansen. And our guest tonight is Terry Hansen. Terry's website, by the way, is themissingtimes.com. You already linked up with his name at coasttocoastam.com. Here's an email just in. I'm currently a police officer, George, that works nights in Montana. Growing up on the Maelstrom Air Force Base, I know through my father that at the same time those missile silos went crazy, five hydroelectric dams surrounding Great Falls had mass electric low voltage conditions, causing them to burn up and shut down. The UFOs, he believed, use this electric power. How about that? I have never seen a UFO, but my father, by the way, said in the 60s when he was a little boy, he could watch a cigar-shaped UFO slowly float down the valley. I hope you can use this on the show. That's from TA. That is interesting. Back in a moment with our guest, Terry Hansen. Our guest, Terry Hansen. Terry, rough situation down there in the South, I'll tell you.
It really is, George. I've watched a lot of the coverage on TV here.
The coverage, of course, is a little different than the kind of coverage that you've talked about and the lack of with the UFOs and in the reporting of this of such. Do you think government directly contacted some of the media in those days in the 40s and 50s and said back off?
I'm fairly certain that they did. One of the things that I try to drive home very clearly in my book is that if you look at the history of the media-government relationship going back to World War I, you quickly discover that there really is not very much of an adversarial relationship between the big media companies and the government. When the government has a problem of some kind, whether it wants to go to war or whatever the situation is, they almost always appeal to the big media companies, to the leading journalists, to help them condition public thinking in the direction that they want things to go. World War One and World War Two are classic examples where, in both wars, there was quite a lot of anti-war sentiment prior to the onset of hostilities.
Right.
And the U.S. government undertook to change public opinion through a very massive and sophisticated program of censorship and propaganda. And in both cases, these programs were administered and carried out by leading journalists, media executives, and media companies of the day. In the Robertson panel, the Robertson panel specifically recommended using the Walt Disney Company to, you know, change public opinion about UFOs. And the Disney Company, of course, had done a lot of propaganda films in World War II, so it was kind of a natural avenue of approach to try to influence public opinion in that way. And of course, these days, a lot of the big network affiliates, or the network, the major networks, I should say, are often owned by companies that derive most, if not all, of their profits from the Pentagon in some fashion. So there's a lot of pressure to kind of go along with the program, whatever it is.
David Jacobs constantly writes that he believes these extraterrestrials are extremely dangerous, very hostile, that they're basically messengers of deception, if I can coin a phrase of a book by Jacques Vallée, and that is a major reason why a lot of this is not being disclosed.
Yes, I'm familiar with that argument, and as I say, I can't rule that out. I do think that they are deceptive and they're very coy, and that it's very hard to determine what their real agenda is. However, to naturally assume that their deceptiveness means hostility, I think, is a leap of logic that I'm not prepared to make, I guess. I talked to Robert Salas, who was the missile officer down in the bunker in 1967, and he says that his impression of why the UFOs shut down the ICBMs was simply to tell us, don't play around with nuclear weapons. In other words, it wasn't a hostile act, it was kind of a caution or a warning not to do certain things. It may very well be that the reason the UFOs came at the time they did in the late 40s and early 50s was because of our development of nuclear weapons and you know, the very destructive tendencies we had exhibited in World War II. So I'm really kind of open-minded as to what their real motivations are. Now, I wouldn't rule out that some of them are hostile or dangerous, but, you know, there are all sorts of hostile and dangerous people on Earth, too, and we have to kind of put things in perspective.
Well, they may think that we are such a hostile group that, you know, they're going to fight fire with fire. That's very possible.
Well, absolutely. I mean, they may simply be looking after their own interests. They may have an interest in planet Earth, you know, beyond what we can even appreciate or recognize. I mean, for all we know, planet Earth is like the Galactic National Park or something like that, and they may not want to see it destroyed. And we're doing a lot of things right now which are extremely destructive to ourselves and the environment.
Do you believe that, in terms of pure science, that nuclear blasts and explosions could have any kind of detrimental effect on parallel universes or other things in our own universe? And maybe that's a concern on their part?
I have no way of knowing for sure, George, because I'm not a physicist. I know I've read about the theories of parallel universes and so on, and it's very possible that some of our activities do impinge on some you know, parallel universe or something, but it's pure speculation as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. The biggest issue that you think are facing us right now in the ufology field, and of course you'll be talking at the conference on UFO censorship and propaganda, is it the censorship or the propaganda that is the most important problem, or is it both?
Well, I think it's really a little of both, but as I say, I think the U.S. government has become historically progressively more secretive over time, and I think that has begun to seriously erode the form of government that we set out to achieve, which is representative democracy, or a republic, democratic republic, if you want to put it that way. There was a good book written by the late Senator Moynihan about secrecy, and it's just called Secrecy. That's the title. And he tracks the origin and growth of secrecy in the United States government and how it has kind of eroded our entire system. And I think the U.S. government is simply slowly grinding to a halt because it can't deal with, you know, common problems that we face, like the budget deficit and things like that. And a lot of it is that things are being covered up that the public needs to know about. So I would say the first thing we need to do is have a lot less secrecy than we do have. If there are scary things that we find out in the course of UFO glasnost, if you want to put it that way, I think that we can face it. I mean, we faced a lot of scary things in life. There are all sorts of hazards that we deal with on a daily basis, and somehow we come through it okay. So I have a feeling that we could deal with this one as well.
You know, I had to wait a day because of the tragedy of the hurricane, of whether to, cancel, move you a little bit, or, just continue to do this interview. And I figured, you know what, both are major stories. One, of course, much more deadlier than the other, but still information as well, and that I think needs to get out, if not today, eventually. And so made a decision that, you know, the first hour we would devote it to this horrible hurricane coverage. And then the rest of the program we would chat with you about a problem that you see and others see this as real. This is not just a figment of your imagination, is it?
No, I really don't think it is, George. And I think if you review some of the documents on my website, you'll see that there is definitely something been going on here.
Let's go back to presidents, if we can. What role did they have, Terry, in any of this censorship or propaganda?
Well, there's actually someone who's an expert in that subject. His name is Grant Cameron, and he'll be one of the speakers at the NUFOC conference in L.A. But I think that my reading of the situation is that some of the presidents early on, probably Truman and Eisenhower, were well aware of what was going on, they oversaw the institution of the CIA and various other security measures, which began to manage public perceptions about this. Presidents after that, I think some of them probably did know and some of them probably didn't know much about it. I think Kennedy probably knew quite a lot because he had a naval intelligence background. Carter probably knew something about it, but I don't think he was ever given the full story. According to Webster Hubble, Clinton tried to get information about the subject and was rebuffed. Nixon probably did know a lot about it, I think. He was a pretty knowledgeable guy for all his other foibles.
Well, Jackie Gleason's wife at the time said that Richard Nixon showed him a captured alien.
Yes, that's right. And I talked earlier about the National Enquirer and its relationship to the CIA. Well, it turns out that Nixon's Secretary of Defense was unusually supportive of the National Enquirer. And when Gene Pope, the publisher, died, he actually gave the eulogy at Pope's funeral. And Pope had some particular clout with the White House. He was trying to get his newspaper into the Winn-Dixie grocery store chain, and the Nixon White House kind of reached out and gave the Winn-Dixie executives a tour of the White House, and they were so impressed with the clout that Pope had with Nixon that they decided to let his paper into their grocery store chain. Now, the interesting thing was that Gene Pope was asked about this by a Forbes magazine reporter, you know, how is it that you have this kind of clout with Nixon? And he responded in a sort of mysterious way. He said, well, it's politics. One hand washes the other. So my reading of that is that that Pope was probably doing something for the Nixon White House or the Pentagon that sure. They felt was worth rewarding.
Absolutely. Late President Ronald Reagan had what he called his fantasy. and that was, of course, a visitation from extraterrestrials. And he would include that in a lot of his speeches, specifically one at the United Nations when he talked about the entire world becoming almost one around a major threat from aliens. And he was talking about aliens from outer space. My question, though, Terry, is do you really believe he was talking about a real alien threat, that he, Ronald Reagan, knew something? Or was he just using that as a figure of speech to make his speech sound better and, you know, send home a message he was trying to create?
Well, he used that that story about five times during the course of his presidency, which is an unusual number of times. My guess is he probably did know quite a bit about the situation. I think that our politicians are probably more knowledgeable than they pretend to be. Politicians are very good at playing dumb about a lot of things that they in fact know quite a bit about. So I would guess that he probably did know something about this topic.
Do you think nowadays that there is, and this is all gut and speculation, that there is a covert operation underway with regards to UFOs, whether they're in contact with them, know of them, or, you know, they're still channeling these reports around this country and around the world, but there is a black ops program out there somewhere?
I would be willing to bet a lot of money that that's the case, and I have many reasons for saying that. I've read and talked to quite a number of people who are in a position to have some knowledge of these things, and I think it's a much bigger story than has been suspected. I think if we knew where all these black budget dollars have been going all these years, and we're talking about an estimated $20 to $30 billion a year over a long period of time, we would probably find out that a lot of it does have to do with the UFO situation.
Well, I got to tell you, it is on one hand kind of exhilarating to think about its possibilities. On the other hand, we really don't understand it or know what it is. We sometimes like to think our government's watching out for us, but lately I'm not so sure anymore. I am not.
I'm not so sure either, George.
It's a world of disinformation, and it's you begin to lose faith when all you hear and all you get from these organizations are lies on top of lies or denials on top of denials, and then all of a sudden it becomes known that, hey, it didn't happen that way. The credibility's gone out the window.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that the national security explanation is a method of hiding all sorts of unsavory activities.
They just dump it into the pot, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, whatever they want to do, if it's illegal or immoral or whatever, they claim national security and they're off and running. And the public doesn't have any right to ask any questions or know where their tax dollars are going. And I don't think that that's a very safe situation.
I mean, here's my example. I don't know all the things we're doing around this planet and in other countries, but we should be taking our billions of dollars right now that we are spending all over the place and help these people who've been affected by this hurricane. Just the devastation that you see, and it's getting worse, as a matter of fact. Now that she's a tropical storm, but, I mean, the damage is continuing to mount, levees breaking and everything else. We should be doing things to help humanity. And we're not doing that. It's as if our priorities, Terry, are all screwed up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there was an article in the New York Times the other day arguing that the war in Iraq is going to cost us at least $1 trillion, $1,000 billion. And that's an almost unfathomable amount of money. And when you think of what you could do in this country to improve the lives of the average American with that kind of money, it just makes you kind of shudder.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. In my day in news, we used to have a strong UPI and a strong AP. AP, of course, is very strong still. What role did those wire services have? Did they, you know, put quick teletype information out there on the wires, UFOs seen here and there, or did they stay away from this?
Well, you know, there was a very interesting article in the March 24th New York Times about propaganda plan that the CIA had during the invasion of Cuba at the Bay of Pigs in 1961.
Northwoods, huh?
No, this is not Northwoods. This is something else. This was an article by Tim Weiner, I believe.
Okay.
At any rate, the gist of the article was that the CIA had a relationship with the United Press International and AP Wire Services in 1961 where the CIA could essentially put propaganda stories directly onto the AP and UPI wires.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, this shows you how closely the big media organizations have become with the national security state. Now, if they can put propaganda stories right onto the news wires and put them in newspapers around the world that easily, it's also very easy for them to see that certain stories never go out on the wire. And there's a very interesting anecdote in my book about the University of Colorado investigation in the 60s. There was a newspaper reporter named Roger Harkins, R. Roger Harkins, and he suspected that the CIA was somehow covertly managing the Condon investigation. And he did an interview with Jim Lorenzen, who was a very well-known UFO investigator with an organization called APRO at the time. And Lorenzen implicated the CIA in the UFO cover-up. And Harkins purposely wrote up this story, including this information about the CIA, to put it on the wire and see what would happen. And just as he suspected, the story never went out on the wire, even though AP had specifically requested a story on that topic. So
okay,
you have to wonder.
Stay with us, Terry. We'll be back. I'll open up with our guest, Terry Hansen. Terry, the Peter Jennings AVC special in God Rest His Soul. Did you have a chance to see that UFO special? And I really don't think, as Richard C. Hoagland pointed out so accurately, I don't think it was really the Peter Jennings ABC special. I think he merely read the copy provided to him by the division that put that documentary together.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you. I did see the program, and one of the things that jumped out at me was that they I knew a lot of the people that were interviewed for the program, and they used very little of the really good material. They used some sort of low-level cases, but the good material was kind of left on the cutting room floor, as is nearly always the case. You have to remember that ABC is owned by Disney, and Disney was specifically mentioned in 1953 by the Robertson panel as a conduit for anti-UFO propaganda. So I think you can sort of follow the chain there. I don't think that usually these programs are done for a reason. They came down very hard on the Roswell case. I think if you're familiar with the Roswell case, you have to at least admit that there's a large amount of uncertainty as to what really took place there. It's not an open and shut case, as Peter Jennings indicated in that program, and I think it was very unprofessional for him to make that statement.
Well, and they took some pot shots at some people in the field of ufology who have really committed their futures, their lives, and, you know, I thought they got a bad rap.
I think they did, too. I don't think it was a very, very good program, but fairly typical fare for the networks, I'm afraid.
Do you know anything about a missile shield, according to Don in Grand Rapids, Michigan? He's asking you this question. Do you know anything about a missile shield being developed that could be some sort of anti-UFO defense array? Ever hear of anything?
Well, I know that was one of the claims that Colonel Corso made in his book The Day After Roswell, that SDI was really a cover for an anti-UFO defense system. It's entirely plausible. I don't really know for sure. I don't, you know, I'm not an insider, but I'm struck by the irrational arguments put forth for the SDI or, you know, Star Wars scheme. It doesn't make any sense from a conventional military point of view. The anti-missile systems have never really made much sense. You know, if you assume that the government behaves rationally, they must have had another reason for pursuing that, and perhaps it did have something to do with UFOs, but I don't know for sure.
What's happening worldwide with this phenomenon?
Worldwide? You know, I think there sightings continue. There's been a lot of these mysterious triangular craft-type sightings in the past few years, and I don't know exactly what that's all about. Some people think that it's military craft, but that doesn't seem to make much sense to me. I can't imagine why the government would spend vast sums of money to develop a secret aircraft and then fly it over the heads of thousands of people. It seems a little bit odd. the whole issue of abductions and that sort of thing has sort of reached a dead end in some ways, and that people, the scientists who've tried to study it, have not been able to come to a conclusion or come to a consensus as to what's really going on there. I'm inclined to think that many of the abduction cases are real experiences, but exactly what they mean, I'm not sure.
Do you think the government sent out some skeptics and debunkers as well to minimize the story of UFOs?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, I had an opportunity to interview or to pitch some questions to Carl Sagan before he died, and they were very pointed, specific questions, and the questions that Sagan gave me were unscientific in the extreme. It was clear that he was not telling a straight story there, and I kind of think that was one of his jobs, is to sort of muddy the waters and keep people confused about what was going on with UFOs.
Have you ever found anything out about what might be going on at Area 51 in Nevada?
All I know are what, you know, the many sources say about it. As you know, there are many rumors that's where the secret UFO R&D takes place. But there's so much disinformation dished out along with the information that it's really hard to separate fact from fiction. And I think that's done on purpose, of course.
Have you stumbled across any reports from anyone, pilots or otherwise, who have seen occupants in these crafts?
Well, there are many. There are quite a number of classic UFO reports. The Father Gill case in New Guinea is a real
that's a great
amazing
one.
Story. You're probably familiar with that.
Yes.
This craft hovered over or near a village for quite a long time. I think it was days or hours at least, and it was very clear to the people on the ground that there were some sorts of beings on board the craft. So there are many, many reports of beings or entities associated with these craft, either in the air or on the ground. Usually, I think on the ground more often.
Dave from Toronto wants to know of your thoughts on crop circles and if you've done any work in that arena.
I haven't really done any work in that area. I did go to England several years ago, and was with a friend of mine who's kind of an expert in that area, and he gave me a tour of some of the crop circles, crop formations, or whatever you want to call them. my impression was that the one of them that I was in would have been extremely difficult to manufacture by ordinary means, because the crops were collapsed downward vertically and all at once. They weren't spread down in a sequential fashion by waving a stick or a string or a rope or something like that. Whatever technology was used to make this particular formation was very unusual. I really don't know who's behind it or what's behind it. That's something I can only speculate about.
What about the cooperation of other governments? Indeed, there is some. How do you think that was arranged?
I think that there's probably quite a lot of communication between the various intelligence agencies. In 1947, there was a treaty called the Secret Treaty, or the UK-USA Agreement, and it was essentially an agreement among all the major English-speaking countries to share intelligence. And so I think there's probably coordination on this subject to some degree among the various governments. If you are familiar with the case in Brazil, the Varginha case, I've forgotten the gentleman's last name, but anyway, there's a book about this case, and it involved the apparent crash or landing of a craft and a number of creatures or entities that were running around free after the event. It seemed fairly evident that the Brazilian government was somehow cooperating with the U.S. government on this particular case. So, yeah, I think there's definitely cooperation.
Do you think that there's going to be some rogue person somewhere who is looking at files? Maybe he's responsible for files for other countries, and he says, you know what? I'm going public with all this. I'm taking the pictures, the stories, and I'm coming public with it. Or do you think he's been sustained, bought off, who knows what?
Well, actually, I think a lot of people have done essentially that. They haven't had anything, you know, like an alien artifact or anything like that, but they've had some pretty darn good evidence. I think if Peter Jennings had been an honest journalist and he had taken the material that he was basically handed on a silver platter, he could have done a program that would have just about blown the lid off the entire subject. There wouldn't have been too much doubt in the minds of 90% of the viewers that this was a real phenomenon. The problem is, you know, you can come forth with information, but getting someone in the big media companies to pay attention is the problem. In my book, I use the example of the movie 3 Days of the Condor, where at the end of the movie, Robert Redford's talking to the CIA guy, and he tells him that he's just given the whole story to the New York Times, and the CIA guy responds, "How do you know they'll publish it?" And that's really the problem. I mean, you can take this stuff to the media. I've tried it myself. They just aren't interested in publishing it.
Well, that's true. You know, you've got some smaller radio programs that are doing a good job trying to get the word out. And then, of course, you have Coast to Coast, which is doing it in a large fashion. And that's about it, isn't it?
It really is. There are relatively few outlets that take the subject seriously. And as far as serious, you know, what passes for serious news organizations like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, good luck. I mean, they're really not going to pursue this. They could. They have the resources. The information is there. There are lots of very good witnesses out there willing to talk. They just don't want to pursue it.
What about the possibility, according to Arrest in Ventura, that the government is using the UFOs as a cover story because they want to test experimental weapons, craft, and they want all of us to think there are UFOs out there?
Well, I think that if you really look at the cases, the raw data, the type that I include on my website and the type that other people have documented over the years, it's pretty clear that there is a real UFO phenomenon. And, you know, these devices were being seen in some cases in the early part of the 20th century, sometimes in the 19th century. I don't think that explanation really washes. Now, it's undoubtedly true that some things that are reported as UFOs probably are secret craft or remotely piloted vehicles or something of that nature. I think that sort of thing does go on, but it doesn't explain the UFO phenomenon in its entirety.
Well, let's talk about this primarily now. What if the possibilities that we are covering up UFO stories is because we want to preserve religion? What happens to religion, organized religion, if the world's population truly believes that there are extra people, I keep calling them people, but there are beings that live beyond our planet?
Well, you know, this has been a problem that scientists have faced since the time of Galileo. Galileo was arguing that there were other planetary bodies orbiting outside the Earth, and the Earth was not the center of the universe, and all this sort of thing. There was another scientist named Giordano Bruno who argued that, there were other intelligent life forms on other planets and so on, and he was burned at the stake by the Catholic Church for that. So there's always going to be a lot of kind of a reaction from the established religious order against any kind of new scientific discovery or revelation. But I don't think that is a good reason to halt our investigation into the nature of experience.
Do you think we're ever going to get to the bottom of this?
Well, I hope so. a lot of people...
In our lifetime?
It's conceivable, but I don't... You know, it's like Einstein said about the universe, we'll probably never understand it all. But I think we will come to the realization that we live in a universe that is populated with many forms of intelligence and that the universe is very old and very complex. we'll, you know, that alone, I think, would be a giant step forward from where we are right now.
Tell me about the title of your book, The Missing Times.
Well, it's kind of a takeoff of a very well-known book by Bud Hopkins called Missing Time. And it's also sort of an oblique reference to the New York Times, which I argue has been less than forthright about this subject. I actually met Bud Hopkins at a dinner a few years ago, and I guess he got quite a kick out of the title himself.
He's a good man.
Yeah, he is. He's a very nice guy.
You know, and we need more Bud Hopkins like that out there, I think, in order to continue to try to convince people that these things are real. You know, you had alluded earlier to the belief system of most people, and the latest polls I continue to see show that people believe that there is extraterrestrial life out there, and they believe we've been visited. And these are astounding figures, by the way. They're not just a few. There are lots of people out there that believe this.
That's right, and I think as science and technology progress and ordinary people have access to technologies that once were only available to people in the military intelligence field, it'll become even more obvious that there's something going on because the Internet is a tremendous research tool. There's a lot of very good, solid, sure, well-documented information out there, and it's now available to everyone. You don't have to depend on the New York Times or CBS TV or Fox to tell you what's going on. The information is there, and you can find it if you want to take a little time and look for it.
How do you know, though, that information, Terry, is accurate? How do you know, and of course you don't even know that on a network level, but how do you know that this is not just some kind of mumbo-jumbo tossed out on the Internet for the world to see?
Well, you know, the truth is that you can never be 100% certain about the reliability of any information, no matter what its source. It's always possible that someone could be fooling us about, say, the existence of nuclear weapons or something like that. You could take a skeptical stance on almost anything, and if you're a committed skeptic, you'd find a way around every argument. But I think by correlating the information with multiple sources, you can be reasonably certain that whether the information is valid or not.
All right, and again, your website, what do people find when they pop up over to themissingtimes.com?
Well, they find a variety of documents that I was unable to include in their entirety in the book, news clippings from the 50s and some of the news coverage about the UFO overflights in Montana. There's a copy of the Thornton Page letter that implicates CBS TV in the Robertson panel's activities, some photographs, related information that buttresses my book, as well as, of course, a description of the book itself.
Well, I love this quote from Edward Ruppelt that you have in the book, the head of Project Blue Book, that says UFOs were seen more frequently around areas vital to the defense of the United States. How about that? We'll be back. We'll take questions for our guest, Terry Hansen, next on Coast to Coast AM. Any government whistleblowers want to check in with us, too, with regards to UFOs, do so this hour as well. Terry, do you get any other whistleblowers that come to you and say, hey, I've got to tell you what's going on?
Well, I have gotten a few calls like that. I'm always very skeptical about people like that unless they identify themselves, and quite often they're not willing to do that, so I don't know whether they're actually just feeding me information, disinformation, or whether they're on the level.
As much as I applaud the efforts of Dr. Stephen Greer and his disclosure project, it appears to me that that is not just going anywhere. I mean, is that a pretty accurate perception?
Well, I think that is pretty accurate. I watched very carefully what the media response to that press conference they had, the disclosure press conference, and I was impressed by the fact that none of the old television networks or national public radio or public television even acknowledged that the event took place. Most of the coverage that I saw was by smaller regional news outlets, which is usually the pattern with UFO reporting.
Let's go to the phones east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Pittsburgh.
Well, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. Mr. Hansen, have you ever encountered a copy of the Top Secret Estimate of the Situation report, which came out in 1947?
Oh, yes, I'm very familiar with it.
Yeah, have you ever encountered a copy of it? Because I've been trying to locate one.
An original copy?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
No, I've never seen an original copy. All I've seen are the, photographic copies.
Okay, because I was wondering, I have a collection of most of the documents that have been available, and I know that was one that I've been interested in locating. And I was a friend of J. Allen Hynek, and back in the 60s, he told me he had a copy of it, and he turned his only copy about 1952 back into the CIA.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if there was any copies on the still out on the loose anywhere.
I'm not really sure about that. I know that all copies were ordered burned, but I've heard that there are some floating around still.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. What are your views, Terry, of people who have these far-out stories that they've been abducted, that they have been taken to other planets, that they have circled the solar system, portions of the Milky Way galaxy? Do you think these are legitimate people, storytellers? What are they?
Well, that's a real good question. If you read the Cometa report, which was a group of French government and military people that commented on the UFO situation as it was seen by by France, they remarked that they thought the early contactees in the 1950s were part of a psychological operation. In other words, that these were people that were sent out to confuse matters by telling tall tales. But I'm not sure all of them were. I think that there were some genuine people trying to contact us at that time. It's a very complex and confusing question and hard to answer in just a few words.
I understand. West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Missoula, Montana. My name's Vicki, and I grew up in Great Falls.
Oh, great.
I was born in 1955, and after your last caller, I consider myself sane. However, I do believe I have been a contactee since I was 7 years old. Over the years, I have various memories. I don't have total recall, but they have never been anything but pleasant or positive memories. My question for you, Terry, is where can I go or what material could I pick up to read that would parallel more specifically the activities in Great Falls and Montana and some of the things, you know, so I can draw some parallels to events in my life? As a kid, I noticed a lot of different strange anomalies in that town amongst, different family members and different families in general in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd really like to research that out some more if I could.
Okay. Well, there was a book written back in the 70s, I believe. It's called Mystery Stalks the Prairie. Have you ever heard about that?
No, but you mentioned it earlier this evening.
Okay. Well, that book, the full text of that book is actually on the Internet now. You can go on the Internet and read it in its entirety. Copies of it are very rare, original copies, but... I have a link to it on my website. If you go into supporting documents, I believe, or recommended links, one of those two areas, it should be there.
And your link is, I can get that through Coast to Coast,
yep,
correct?
It's yeah. There, ready to go.
Okay. Well, for those people out there that are questioning this, I would more than be happy to confirm the existence of them, and especially around the Great Falls area. I've seen them as early as 7 years old, and I've seen them as recently as, 3 or 4 years ago.
What do they look like? What do they look like exactly?
Most of my sightings have been at night, and the ones that are in the daytime, I simply know that they're there. I have communication mostly through telepathy or through feelings. I couldn't give you a description out of a photo. I'm sorry for that, because I know a lot of listeners would like to have that, but I can't do that. I do know that there's many different groups of extraterrestrials, and I do know that there's good ones and bad ones, just like there are human races and any other race of being. I can confirm that for you, but I couldn't tell you. I'm sorry. I wish I could. That's part of why I want to do more research, is to try and link up with some information, like I say, to parallel what's happened to me in my life growing up in Great Falls. And I'm still in Montana. I'm on the other side of the mountains now. But one evening over here, I saw they were all in formation, and it was at night, and they looked simply like stars moving through the sky, but they were not stars, and they were not aircraft.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I have a former next-door neighbor whose father had a ranch in Montana, and they had a lot of very strange experiences, particularly cattle mutilation experiences, which they were never able to attribute to any reasonable cause.
Is there any reason to believe that the government, you know, let's say they're monitoring a program like this, Terry? I mean, do they hold a high-level meeting tomorrow going, we got to stop this stuff? I mean, what do you think they do?
They probably do discuss it, I imagine, but my feeling is that there's probably a variety of positions within the intelligence community as to how this issue should be handled, and that, that some people are dead set against disclosure, and others are others realize that something eventually has to be said about it. So I think they're probably a little bit torn. They probably don't entirely dislike some information coming out, is my guess.
Let's go east of the Rockies. Where are you calling from? And you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Anthony from Joplin, Missouri.
Hey, Anthony, go ahead.
A few years back, some friends of mine and I were out fishing, and it got dark, and we weren't catching anything, so we started watching the stars. And all of a sudden, three out of the four of us all at the same time said, dude, did you see that star come on? And it looked, you know, just like a, you know, a star coming on in the sky. And then suddenly we noticed three red lights in a triangle formation coming from the south at an enormous speed towards the light that just came on. And then the light that just came on just took off. I mean, just zipping across the sky to the north. And then three more red lights in a triangle formation came from the north. This thing reversed its direction without even skipping a beat. It was absolutely awesome. And then did a right angle turn to the west. And then three more red lights in a triangle formation came zooming in from the west. It did a couple more maneuvers. I believe it reversed its direction and another right angle turn. Anyway, it wound up going, excuse me, back to the east. And then another set of three red lights and an apparent triangle formation came zooming from that way. And this thing was apparently boxed in. And just as suddenly as that light had come on, it went off. And as the red lights were crisscrossing in the sky, I disturbed my buddies. I said, I don't know about y'all, you guys, but we probably ought to go. I don't want to end up on a table with a probe or anything. And that kind of disturbed them. So I can, you know, I can see why they would keep this, you know, would keep stuff like that quiet, because, you know, it would disturb people. You know, there are people like that JC that Art Bell messes with out there. And, you know, I think he's a prime example of why they keep this quiet.
Well, you never know about that at all. Thanks for your call. Appreciate your statement. First time caller line, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hello?
Hello. Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, my name's Joshua. I'm from Port Angeles.
Okay, Joshua. That's in Washington, isn't it?
Yes,
stay
sir.
There.
Right
okay.
Next to Victoria.
Got it.
Terry, glad to have you on. I was just asking, actually, if the government actually admitted to UFOs existing, have they ever talked about mass hysteria? Maybe that's why they keep it quiet?
Well, there was something we discussed earlier, the Brookings Institution report, which concluded that if there were open acknowledgement of contact, you know, of the existence of an advanced civilization, that it might cause our civilization to collapse. And, of course, there was also a famous broadcast by Orson Welles in 1938, the War of the Worlds broadcast, which did create a kind of a panic of sorts, and was the subject of a study by a well-known social psychologist, Hadley Cantrell. And Cantrell later went to work for the CIA. He was actually mentioned in the Robertson panel, I believe. So, yeah, it's something that the government probably did consider and you know, perhaps is still a concern.
If I can ask one more question.
Yeah, sure, please, go ahead.
If you were in that head of government, would you keep it quiet?
Well, I think that they have to find a middle ground. There may possibly be things that they don't want to disclose legitimately. I don't know. I guess we lost them there.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, it's gotten to be a little ridiculous in the sense that most of the American public doesn't believe what the government's saying anyway. So why don't they at least acknowledge what everyone already believes, which is that they're here?
I think we can handle the truth, don't you?
I think we can handle it. You know, we've handled a lot of other shocking truths throughout human history and come through it okay.
International Line, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's John in Toronto. How are you tonight?
Hi, John. We're doing fine. Thank you.
Well, there you go. Two things. One, first of all, it always amazes me when there are people who put forth the theory that disclosure would be an end to religion. I guess it would be from the control point of view, but I think that it'd be a great boon for spirituality because the God I believed in is certainly capable of putting life on more than just one planet in the universe. I think it would just reinforce that. And my question is there any, like, real evidence that the mainstream media is actually actively colluding in keeping this information suppressed?
Well, that of course, is the subject of my book. It's a question that I set out to answer, and the answer is yes. There is. I mentioned the example of CBS News or CBS Television, which apparently played an important role in the Robertson panel's program of training and debunking. But there's a lot of other evidence that bears on this question, too. It's a little more complex and circumstantial, but fairly compelling if you actually read the book.
I will. Sorry, and I'm sorry I missed that. I was writing someone a speeding ticket, so I didn't get the whole show. Take care, George.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it, John, being on the program. Terry, you know, more and more people are beginning to acknowledge the fact that they distrust because of this disinformation. Let's talk about the old times, the biblical days, when I believe this planet was being visited on maybe even a more active rate, maybe because we were seated. Who knows what was going on? I wonder if pharaohs and emperors tried to withhold information from their own people in those days. Is there any old accounts that would attest to that?
As far as specifically related to the UFO topic, nothing comes to mind immediately, George, but many types of information have been kept secret from people for a variety of reasons. I know when the world was being explored in the age of exploration, a lot of the maps of the world were very highly classified because, you know, governments didn't want other governments to know about the existence of certain land masses and so forth. So secrecy has always kind of gone hand in hand with any kind of government.
All right, next up, let's go to our wildcard line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name is Will. I'm from Cerritos.
Hello, Will. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to just ask you about, there was a video on UPN 13, about 10, 13 years ago. And it was a family having dinner, and then suddenly, like, they were, like, invaded by aliens. Like, have you seen that?
Yes, I have. It was a hoax. It was not a real event.
Oh, it was a hoax?
Yes.
Because yeah, I don't know. I've, like, for these past years, I thought it was real. Wanted to find out about that.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate you being part of the program, Will, as well. Let's grab one more before the break, and then we'll come back for more. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. My name is John, and I'm calling to find out if Terry has any idea if there's any correlation between UFOs and, like, the Mothman of Point Pleasant, Ohio.
Hmm.
I'll hang up and listen for your answer. Thank you, guys.
Okay. There's always been some talk that the UFO sightings, extraterrestrials, Mothman may be directly related. Ever come across anything there?
Well, I'm very familiar with the Mothman case, the book by John Keel specifically. I think that there's a range of phenomena, range of intelligent phenomena that some of which are related to UFOs and some of which are not as clearly related to UFOs. It's been a while since I read that book, but, you know, I'm not sure. I don't recall whether the Mothman case was a UFO-related case or not, in the sense that there was a craft or something like that.
No, it was not. It was just the creature itself.
Yeah. As I say, I think intelligence comes in a variety of forms, and I think some UFOs are clearly physical objects. There are some types of entities that are reported that it's not quite as clear that they're physical as we are.
All right, stay with us. We'll come back and wrap things up. We'll take Terry Hansen, our guest. Terry, of course, will be at the National UFO Conference in Hollywood, California. If you live out in that area, listening to us on KFI between September 2nd and the 5th, and you can get more information on what website, Terry?
The website is simply nufoc.com.
Simple enough. And you will be speaking, of course, on this subject, UFO censorship and propaganda.
That's correct.
Back to the phones. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I think the dates are the 2nd through the 4th rather than the 5th.
Okay. I held you over another day. Let's go to our West of the Rockies line. Where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. I'm calling from Phoenix. My name is Chris.
Hello, Chris. Go ahead.
I'm a longtime listener. Great program tonight. UFOs have been an interest of mine for most of my 50 years on this planet. So great show tonight.
Thank you.
I have only once heard anybody talk, Terry, about you were talking tonight about UFO showing an interest in nuclear missile silos. And I have a videotape on UFOs that talked about there was a Midway class aircraft carrier at the late 1940s, early 50s, that I believe was the first U.S. aircraft carrier to carry probably, it was carrying nuclear weapons, probably tactical nuclear weapons. And this thing was being shadowed by UFOs continuously, sometimes numerous craft. Can you expound on that?
I think the aircraft carrier that you're thinking about is the Roosevelt. Is that?
Yeah, the Franklin D. Roosevelt, yeah.
Yeah. All I know about that is that there were a number of people on the Roosevelt who have related that it was frequently shadowed or monitored by UFOs. Trying to remember, there was a video called Out of the Blue, which was really quite good video as these things go. And I don't know if they talk about the Roosevelt in that case, but they also talk about a case where a UFO interfered with an ICBM test out of California.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah,
yeah, that's a very sensational case. So there are quite a few stories along those lines.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Did you ever hear about these stories that a UFO was seen over Chernobyl during that disaster?
I've heard that, but I don't know for sure whether it's credible or not. I couldn't really comment on it.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. Where might you be? Hi there.
Hi, I'm Dan, and I'm in Omaha, Nebraska.
Hello, Dan.
Hi, Dan.
Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, George. Hi, Terry.
Yeah.
I got a question. Has any commercial airline pilots ever come forward and told you anything?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I related just such an example earlier. It involved a Braniff airline pilot, and I think it was in the early 60s, and they were shadowed by a disc that flew alongside their aircraft for some time, and the pilot claimed that when they got to the other end, they were accosted by military intelligence people and separated, and his fellow pilot was called back into active duty. He was a reserve officer, I guess, and sent off to some remote part of the world, and he was never able to find him again. There are lots of stories like that, and many of them are in the newspapers in the early 50s before things like this became censored.
Really? One more question, if I may.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
About 9 years ago, there was a show on called Alien Autopsy. Whatever happened to that, and was that debunked?
Yes.
I think it's generally regarded as a hoax. But there are certain people that defend it. It's very difficult sometimes to definitively say whether a given film or photograph is real or not. It's a complicated issue. But I think the consensus is that it was a hoax.
Pretty dramatic footage, but I would agree with you. It just didn't look real to me when I saw that for the first time. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, sir. It's you.
Yes, thank you. Hi, George Murray.
Hi.
This is my name is Sean, and I'm calling up that I have my own experience with extraterrestrial, but not in a physical form, kind of like spiritual form, like energy.
Yes.
And I just wondered if anybody else has similar experiences.
All right. Well, we'll find out. I don't know. Have you come across that at all, Terry?
Well, there's a wide variety of experiences that people report, and they may very well be valid in some sense. But whether they're related to UFOs or extraterrestrials is a little difficult to determine sometimes. As I say, I'm inclined to think that there are many forms of intelligence in the universe. There's been a long-standing debate in the UFO community as to whether UFOs are extraterrestrial or interdimensional or time travel or something like that. And my guess is it's probably all of the above. I think the universe is very complex, and life takes many forms.
The History Channel seems to be doing some really good work in the UFO field. I mean, very good in-depth, and I'm just wondering why others don't follow in their footsteps.
I can't answer the question as to why others don't follow. There's clearly a lot of interest in this subject, and there's a lot of material, a lot of people willing to talk about what they know. But it's generally done in an entertainment format as opposed to a serious news format. It just seems that the subject is a little safer to deal with in that respect. It's like my brother-in-law is a political cartoonist, and he can get away with things in political cartoons that you could never get away with as a writer.
Well, that is so true. East of the Rockies, your turn. Hi.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
Yes. Where do I begin? Collision avoidance lights on aircraft are used for just that, collision avoidance. If a race could come from another planet and they're trying to be clandestine when they get here, why wouldn't they just turn their lights off? You always hear these lights at night, number one. Number two, when you're talking about these, shadowing nuclear missile, whatever, ships, bases, whatever, those, it's possible that, that would just be the technology of whatever, either Russia or the U.S. probing either their own ships just to see, hey, can we get away with this technology, being stealth, just testing it on their own stuff, or it could be, the Russians checking out our stuff and we pick it up,
right.
Number one. And, especially now, I fly radio control helicopters and stuff, the technology is incredible. I mean, I could easily make a UFO and fly around at night and make people think, oh, wow, I'm seeing a UFO. But the technology that we have right now is the advanced technology is always looking towards nanotechnology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if a civilization from another planet, okay, can reach us here, wouldn't they use nanotechnology, very, very small craft, try to mimic, a bird or something like that, rather than these wild stories that you hear about? These things seem to defy Newton's laws, with inertia and things like that.
Right.
And
well, let me just try to answer some of those questions.
Okay. I have a couple others. But
yeah, I'm sure. As far as, the collision light issue, I can only assume that because they do have lights on them, that it's because they want us to see them for some reason. They're displaying their existence.
Might also be part of the power source, Terry.
Pardon
me? It might also be part of their power source, which emits light.
But you can mask that. I mean, if it's emitting a light, you would think they'd be able to. We can mask, you know, heat and infrared. So I would imagine they could mask light.
It's possible, but as far as the question about you know, whether they're Soviet or U.S. craft, that's a little more difficult to answer today because, as you said, that you know our technology has made tremendous strides since the 1950s. The argument against that is that the classic flying saucer sightings exist prior to 1947. In other words, you can find flying saucer sightings described very clearly and articulately back into the early 20th century and even the 19th century. So,
also even in the Bible, Ezekiel's wheel, some people say that that's a UFO sighting.
Yes, and there's a famous symbol in Egyptian hieroglyphics of a winged disc, and that literally means flying disc. So this concept of a flying saucer has been around for a very, very long time and predates the manned flight by Americans or Soviets.
If I may, I have just two other questions.
Yep,
sure. Go ahead.
Do you really believe that the government could hide such information if so many people are exposed to it? Because so many conspiracies fall apart. Mm-hmm. And, you know, granted, the government's very good at slandering people, will make them look like a lunatic. But if there's so many people, you know, that come out with information,
right.
I mean, there's got to be a shred of proof that these people could come up with that would be able to withstand the slander that they're going to expect.
Well, there is. It's not so much that they're hiding it as that they're denying it. There's a difference. You know, there is quite a lot of information about this subject in the public domain already. It doesn't get reported, as I said, in the mainstream news media, but there's quite a lot of good information, and a lot of people have come forth, such as Robert Salas that I mentioned earlier. Many other people from the military and from NASA have had these experiences and have come forth and talked about it, but it doesn't get a lot of attention.
Yeah. Now, I was just wondering if you guys in the field have ever thought about, you know, the intentions or the motivations for these people to come to travel these vast distances? Try to, you know, you say, well, maybe they want to be seen. Well, they could simply land and do it that way. But, you know, has there been a lot of discussion on, you know, they certainly wouldn't be probing us for our resources. I mean, if they needed water or something, they could go to, like, you know, Io and just take a chunk of that. Or, you know, there are resources all over the planet that you don't have, you know, parasites
right.
living on that you'd have to, you know, hide from. They don't have to come here to get resources. That would be, you know.
Oh, yes. Well, people do discuss that issue. You know, we don't know whether they're coming vast distances. We only know that, you know, they enter our atmosphere and they do what they do and then they leave. It's a little like asking, why do 747s fly over my house here? I mean, there are all sorts of reasons why airplanes fly over. There's no one single answer. It's just that there are literally tens of thousands of airplanes in the air over the United States at any given time. And the same may be true in the universe, that the universe is simply very heavily populated, and we occasionally see some of the traffic here for all manner of different reasons.
Do you believe that UFOs are still a national security issue here in this country?
Most definitely. But I'm not sure that that's a legitimate national security concern. In other words, by this time, it may be more a matter of embarrassment or fear of public reaction to the disclosure that they've been lying about it for 60 years or so.
All right, let's pick it up by going to our wild card line. You're on the air with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing? My name is Andrew. I'm from San Francisco.
Hello, Andrew. Go ahead.
My question is regarding free energy, specifically a model on Tesla's design. I'm very curious as to what others think about how free energy relates to the way that the UFO model travels to and from different parts of space.
Good question. Good question.
How that might relate to why Earth is so important within our own solar system and how it relates to the free energy.
Okay. Well, there are a lot of people that believe that the entities or aliens behind certain UFOs are capable of manipulating space-time and gravity and things like that, and generating energy from sources that we're not yet familiar with. And that's very possible and even probable, I'd say. And it may be one of the reasons why the subject is still very hush-hush, because you know, if we had an energy source like that, it would be very destabilizing economically and otherwise.
Okay, let's take another call or two, and then we're out of time. West of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Me?
Yes, sir.
It's George, good show. I've been listening to you for years, and this is top of the line.
Well, appreciate you being part of the show tonight. Go ahead.
Terry.
Yes?
I have a question. One of your callers, the one before the last one, asked, and he almost touched on it. He mentioned slander. I'm wondering, you haven't addressed what the ramifications, the legal ramifications would be if the government were to make a disclosure of this magnitude.
Well, that's a very good question. I think there are probably a lot of serious issues related to that. You know, we talked earlier about the black budget and the fact that large amounts of money have been siphoned out of the public treasury for unknown purposes. I think it's very likely that a lot of the things that the U.S. government has done to cover this up have been highly illegal, and that just the fact of admitting it would open up the government to all sorts of legal challenges.
And even from private citizens, I presume.
I'm sure you're right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all I had. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm glad you were able to get in. Let's get you, first-time caller line. Hi, go ahead.
This is Norm from Albuquerque.
Hello, Norm.
Mr. Hansen, I'm impressed by the depth of your investigation, your evident intelligence, and your demeanor, which just exudes credibility. Now, I have a simple question. If the government of Brazil is not concerned about the collapse of their civilization upon disclosure, and in fact it didn't collapse, why is our government concerned about the collapse of our civilization?
I can only speculate about that. I just think that some governments in the world are more open and less inclined towards secrecy than the United States government. The U.S. government has become very distrustful of the public over time and has become more and more closed and secretive. And there are long historical reasons for that, but that's probably the major reason, that the difference between the different countries.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I have always believed, Terry, and I will take it with me to the grave, that I believe that governments think that they will lose control of all of us if we truly knew, truly believed, publicly or otherwise, that extraterrestrials exist in this universe beyond us. And I think that's probably the biggest reason why they just won't tell us, because I think once they do, they will realize that whatever they're trying to do with us in terms of control is so insignificant that we just wouldn't listen anymore.
Very possible. I think there are multiple reasons for the secrecy. A lot of different elements of the status quo are, you know, have their own issues to protect.
Well, Terry, I'm out in St. Louis. Otherwise, I would have been back in Los Angeles, and I would have seen you this weekend. So you're going to have to go at it alone, my friend.
Okay, George. Well, I appreciate your having me on. It's been a great, great interview. You're very, I don't mean to butter you up, but you do a very even-handed job of interviewing people.
Well, you can butter me up anytime you want. Thanks, Terry. Appreciate you being on the program.
Thank you very much.
His website, of course, is themissingtimes.com. It's the same name as his book, The Missing Times. And you just heard it as he talked about propaganda and just not disclosure. For Dan Galante, Steve Carr, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesure, Ian Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, pray and be safe, everyone.